Off the ball on News Talk.
Thanks to Screwfix.ie. Championing the trade with a choice of over 20,000 quality trade products.
Hello there, you're welcome along to Monday Night's Off the Ball. Coming up this evening, Eddie O'Sullivan and Rory O'Connor on Monday Night Rugby. They'll give their thoughts on Ireland, Argentina, England, New Zealand and what we're expecting this Saturday. Manchester City put any post-Turin Man U optimism firmly in its place as well over the weekend. Kevin Caban on the football show. Nathan Murphy spoke to Seamus Coleman at Stamford Bridge. We'll play that as well. And Martin O'Neill was in town today. Plus, referee Daniel Sweeney, I'm sure you saw at this stage, was assaulted at a football match in Offaly over the weekend. We're going to talk to Sean Montgomery, who is the chairperson of the Combined Counties Football League, in around 25 minutes or so. Desperate stuff down there. 53106 is the text number. We are at Off the Ball on Twitter. Don McDonald in studio. Hello.
Hi, Joe.
And Richard McCormick. Hello to you.
Hey, Joe.
So, Martin O'Neill will feature on the football show. Do you want to give us a teaser? Anything of major note, Dan?
No, I mean, we're starting off into an international doubleheader. So I've got Northern Ireland Thursday and then Denmark this night week will be, well, some of us will be in our house, I suppose, ready for the competitive game. But I suppose the main thing going on today is this curious situation where Michael Obafemi is in, and I'm sure Richie's going to be talking about it in the bulletin as such. But
Southampton teenager,
born in Dublin, but from sort of Nigerian family, Nigerian parents, who moved to England when he was a kid, basically. And he came on at the weekend. He's been a handful of sub appearances, and he is here. He has come to Dublin, but Martin O'Neill effectively admitting he's in a situation where Obafemi, you know, on Thursday can play against Northern Ireland. That's no problem. But he's going to have to speak to him about, does he want to go to Denmark and play? Because naturally, if he goes to Denmark for that competitive game, He can never play for anyone else. And it does appear that Nigeria there's been comments from the Nigerian side which suggest they wanted to get him. Martin O'Neill said last week he spoke to Tom Moen, who's the Ireland under-19 manager, and who doesn't have any fears about Obafemi's commitment. But it is just a bit of a weird one that you're heading into a week.
You would presume that conversation would have already happened before he comes over.
Well, it hasn't, really, yeah, it seems. Between him and his family, you would have thought.
But if any kind of sensible international setup where somebody's allegiance is still up in the air, calling them into the squad, you would presume that you know what way they want to go.
Yeah, I don't know.
I know there's a bit of wiggle room as regards next week because we're still a week away from that game. But regardless,
I sort of wonder if that's true anymore, though, in the sense that it's become such a culture of now shopping around a small bit that I don't know. It seems, I completely agree with the premise. It should be that way. But it's sort of just, this is the way things are now. Like, I was watching Ireland under-17s play England, under-17s the other day. And there was a guy playing for Ireland, Hodge, I'm trying to think of his first name, plays for Manchester City, who'd been in with the England underage team last month and played for them. There's a guy, Dara Burns, who played for the Republic of Ireland team last month and has played for Northern Ireland since. And the concept of, say, getting someone like Obafemi in, I mean, it seems senior level just seems it's a step too far. But he is sort of coming in to have a look at the setup and, you know, come and train, see how it goes. It just so happens at the time he's been brought in, there's another competitive game in like 3 days' time at the end of it.
Yeah.
So it's like, so what do you want to happen? Does he come along on Thursday and he plays well and the crowd giving him an amazing reaction, and in the euphoria, everyone says, ah, come on to Denmark, won't you? You know, come on. Yeah. Well, like, it was a great crack, we had a good time.
Is it your sense now that the landscape of international football is such that the Obafemis of the world will be invited up and into the squad, the senior squad, in the hope that they like it and it convinces them to commit? That's what we're doing here. Are we trying to woo Obafemi here? Is that what this is about? Is Roy Keane going to bring him breakfast in bed?
We're courting people now, literally in the courting process.
Senior level seems like the extreme end of the scale for that. I mean, in underage football, this is happening. It's commonplace at all underage age groups, and everyone's doing it. Like, England are doing it. Interesting thing about that England game last week, the under-17s, it was a guy playing for England born in Dublin who was playing for England and got sent off in the game. That shopping round now at underage is commonplace. Senior is unusual, but it's not unprecedented. You also think about the fact that, like, Shane Duffy has travelled and been with a Northern Ireland senior squad before.
We should have called Declan Rice up again and been extra nice to him.
Well, I mean, the logic now, this argument's been made that the Declan Rice should have played against Moldova last year. Now, I don't believe that that's a fair argument, because the assumption there is that Declan Rice is like completely brainless and doesn't and didn't know the implications of that. Every young player now knows that they're not just going to be sort of coerced into it. Like, you know, after the Jack Grealish saga, I think most people know the laws of the international game now.
We will talk more in the football.
Yeah, sorry, we're going off on a.
Although we are not talking Declan Rice in depth.
No, but that was the most. You brought up Declan Rice, Joe.
I know, I did.
Why are you having a go? You brought him up yourself.
No, I did. I killed myself as soon as I did it.
This is the new saga. This is Obafemi. This is, we need to get with the message here. Okay. I mean, this could be all over in a week, and hopefully it is. And you'd like to think that Tom Mowen's feeling is true, but I guess when it's one of these things that becomes a self-fulfulling prophecy. I know you want to move on from this, but
I desperately do.
It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy that if you talk about it for enough, he's got options. That it almost leads them to think, oh, maybe I do. You know, maybe I should hold off here. Whereas he hasn't been called up by either of the other options that he has.
There were certainly reports a few weeks back or months back that Nigeria were very interested.
They were keen. I think a member of his family was quoted. I think it might have been his mother. I don't want to sort of get that wrong, but I think I've been quoted suggesting he might be open to it.
Okay.
But he has played for the under-19 since, and he is here. Like he's in Ireland at the moment. He was in Ireland training gear today with
Michael,
the senior
if you're
team.
Listening.
You know, like, he couldn't be any closer to the Ireland setup right now. He's in the hotel. So you sort of hope that he stays, you know, when he's that much, you can go and talk to him.
If anyone bumps into Michael Obafemi over the next few days, for the love of God, be sound.
Should we give them where they're staying? Nice, people know they're in Castleknock. I mean, you know, people just amble around.
Yeah.
You know, we should probably encourage that, actually. But
go out there, be nice to him.
They could be drinking in the Carpenter tonight, bro, you know.
If Roy Keane's not going out of his way to be nice to this kid.
That's maybe just imagining them in the car. We don't really want that to happen.
Dan and his journalistic cohorts. There's Paul and Cork.
Oh, you and you're the journalistic elite.
I love cohorts. A word that's more texted than actually used. You know, it's not a spoken word as such. You know?
When they head off to Denmark next week, will they have the madness tune Our House going through their heads, he wonders.
In the middle of a street.
Well, lads, please focus on the victorious and not the victims in the Manchester derby, says Graeme in Offaly. Heaven forbid Sergio Aguero tunes in and doesn't feel like he's getting his due credit.
Getting the love.
So, I mean, we'll touch on the derby really more so after 9 o'clock. Kevin Caban will join us. I spoke to Kev earlier on today and he was saying he was about to sit down and watch the Manchester derby properly. And I said, will you do me a favour, with the benefit of watching the thing when you know the result and everything, will you just watch Manchester United very closely, and when they get the ball, can you use your professional eye and tell me, is there a plan? Do they know what the hell they're meant to do? Because honestly, I don't think they have a clue what they're meant to do.
Yeah, I mean, I watched the game, but I suppose not with that sort of analytical approach to it. I was sort of, you know, you're watching the game, and I think when you watch Man City, sometimes you get so drawn to their sort of dominance and their brilliance.
Well, that's what Graeme wants you to do, Dan, to focus on the victorious.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing. I mean, I mean, I love watching Man City play because, you know, they are that good to watch, and you're sort of watching their movements and how they do things. I mean, I don't think it's a massive surprise that Manchester United were undone. Like, I think, you know, maybe on Saturday we'd spoken about it in here that. You know, no one could watch the Juventus game last week and say, well, this is the turning of a corner.
No.
You know, it was a random series of events that happened towards the end of a game that gave them a good result.
Yeah.
But, like, to draw any massive meaning from that, you're definitely looking for some sort of confirmation bias, you know, to go down that road. Mm. They were always liable to do that. I mean, the only thing is that Man City might end up just doing that to most teams.
No, sure.
You know,
I mean, it just did feel what it is, which is eighth place team against Manchester City. Mm. You know, going in there, trying to be organised and hang on and be plucky and maybe nick a goal, and Man City ultimately won. I mean, that's the level that the two teams are at. It was kind of interesting in the Sky studios afterwards, where Graeme Souness clearly leading the witness said to Gary Neville,
Gary, stop.
He was like, are you telling me that those players out there, those Manchester United players, that the manager is getting the best from them? And Gary was, I don't know, Graeme. I don't know. genuinely confused. I mean, he was making the point. He was like, Neville, I think, was half saying, well, on the face of it, you'd have to say, no, you're not getting the best from these players. And yet he was saying, look, Van Gaal was a coach. He couldn't get a lot of them doing a whole lot more. He's like, I don't know what to make of Smalling anymore. I don't know what to make
the Valencia
of all these players anymore.
The experience for Neville has coloured his approach to criticising managers. It's not necessarily a Manchester United only thing, although I know a lot of people will jump immediately to that. But the fact that he's actually sat in a dugout as recently as a couple of years ago,
maybe,
in as high profile a league as La Liga, he's kind of gone, this is actually a pretty hard game. And I'm reluctant to lay into anybody who might be struggling at it at the moment.
He was certainly trying to at least imply or suggest to Souness that, look, it is a bit more complicated than that. But Souness was in no doubt.
And Souness has done a lot of managing, you know, and he's not afraid. And yeah, I haven't seen this particular passage, but I've listened to Neville about Manchester United before, and there also seems to be, I think he seems to want to avoid the scenario where Manchester United become this basket case club, chopping and changing managers. And isn't that his fundamental point, that when they sacked David Moyes, like, they lost their, whatever, the Manchester United way, whatever this sort of thing is.
Well, if you think back to West Ham on a Friday night game a few weeks back, when the word was that Mourinho was going to be sacked that weekend.
He was fuming, wasn't he?
He was emotional. You know, he was saying, this is ridiculous that this is where the club has been run.
But I find it, I mean, Neville has, but I mean, I think we've touched on this before. I find it mad that how Neville is almost a player in the Manchester United game. The story now.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he's a big part, I hate this bloody word, the narrative, but you know, in all this sort of the Manchester United sagas and where does Mourinho stand at Woodward, like, Neville is almost just sort of there.
There's Scholes and there's Ferdinand, and then just a level above that.
He's to the forefront of it. And I mean, the suspicion or the feeling is, does he have sort of, you know, view an inclination to get involved there in a non-managerial capacity, but in another capacity at some stage in the future.
Yeah.
But he certainly seems to be like he's trying to be a safeguard. He's there to protect the brand in some way. But I think when it comes to Mourinho, there is a tendency to believe now that is he just defending the indefensible.
Souness could put this another way to Neville. He could say, if Raheem Sterling had been at Manchester United when Mourinho inherited him, and Martial or Rashford, maybe both of them, were at Man City when Guardiola arrived, where would those players be now?
Yeah, and I don't have the answer to this question.
Well, I can tell you. Sterling would be playing for West Ham, sold after 18 months, gone. We all would have said, yes, Sterling just doesn't quite have it. You know, we would have, because that was the feeling on
the Fred example. Like, Fred was bought for 50 million quid and this summer just gone. And I know there's ongoing problems with Mourinho's relationship to Ed Woodward, etc. But, like, the be-all and end-all for Jose Mourinho competing yesterday was whether or not Marouane Fellaini was fit. Basically throwing a 50 million pound midfielder bought not 6 months ago in the bin.
I don't know what's going on there.
But who's improved under the Mourinho tenure?
It's a great question.
So
go on then.
Well, that's the question. I don't have the answer to that question. I'm trying to think, like, you go through that group.
Scott McTominay.
Who's made a push forward? Like, you know, like, I think Lingard credits Van Gaal for a lot of his development. But I suppose Lingard has become a more, like, he was at the World Cup with England. He's become a more prominent player. I'm not sure if you can necessarily say he's been, like, nurtured or developed into a
He had a very
talent.
Good season last year.
But yeah, his profile has definitely increased. Like, Martial was the next big thing before Mourinho got there, right?
You know, the report yesterday, and it was a well-sourced report, I think it was in the Sunday Independent and the Observer yesterday, and this was vague. I mean, this won't surprise anyone, but over the summertime, Spurs came in for Martial and Mourinho was happy to let him go.
Mm.
And someone at the club said, ah, no, he's actually really good. Honestly, give him a chance. He's really good. And so, look, he's kind of fumbled his way into whatever bit of form he's in now. But honestly, with no thanks to Mourinho.
Mm.
And, like, is Rashford kicking on, really, this guy? Who
no, he hasn't. So I'm trying to think.
But the Mourinho way was never, whatever club he's been at, Porto may be an outlier on this. He's always had a cohort of ready-mades who he
cohort.
Just... Yeah, no, yeah, I brought it in. He's had a cohort of ready-made footballers.
Yeah.
Like, you look at the Lampard, Drogba, Terry, Axis, Cech at Chelsea. Like, they're players who were, you know, at a certain age, were already established footballers, and he just managed to get them all clicking at the same time. That's what he does.
Mm.
He gets a certain group of players to click as he wants them to. And because they're not, it's showing up the frailties in his own management technique.
Yeah, because some of those players you mentioned, they loved working them. That first Chelsea team, they loved them. That they also managed to elevate themselves.
Yeah.
I mean, look at Inter Milan as well. Like, you had players who managed to maybe elevate themselves to a level, maybe just a notch or two above the sum of their parts.
Frank Lampard said just about 10 days ago, the best thing Mourinho brought to Chelsea was not really the tactical side of things, it was this sense of family.
Mm.
Now, have you ever seen a more dysfunctional family than Manchester United over the last while? They have to watch, like, Luke Shaw being bullied publicly. It's a mess.
Wouldn't be a happy Christmas in that family.
And Guardiola also
is an EastEnders Christmas special.
It's more of an EastEnders than there's always EastEnders music is about to start.
Poor Albert's gone.
Someone always dies or something goes badly wrong on Christmas Day in EastEnders, doesn't it?
Oh yeah, it's never a good place around Christmas time.
Too
many places.
They go for a big murder or an affair comes out on Christmas Day. They always go for something nasty.
Or somebody delving into madness like
Arthur. You figured this out now. I mean, this has been their strategy.
I don't know this about EastEnders.
I'm just thinking it was a coincidence that every year something seems to go wrong around this time.
I spot the trend
there. Feel like it might have been something thinking behind this, Joe.
In 2016, 15, I spotted this, Dan. Lads, in all seriousness, what kind of midfield player is Herrera? He's not box to box. Did nothing but lose possession yesterday. Derek Foynes in Limerick. Yeah, I mean, Herrera wasn't great. Madish wasn't great. But you know, actually, and I guess we'll get off this now a little bit. You can send in your text. I'll read some of them out, but we'll talk more with Kev. I did look at the likes of Martial and Rashford. Second half was starting. They were walking out together and they were deep in conversation and arms moving and like, you need to go that way and I'll do this. And Martial sort of shrugged. And I did sort of think, I mean, they're not being helped by the manager. And so any good player can look very average when the whole thing's falling apart. Tell Dan,
oh God,
when he gets bored in our house, the Modern Art Gallery is well worth the visit. That's David in Galway. Bear that in mind, Dan. Bit of culture, do you no harm.
I was in our house 10 years ago.
Our house?
11 years ago.
Friendly, wasn't it?
When Ireland played in the most... this actually happened. Like, Ireland beat Denmark 4-0 away when Steve Staunton was manager. A result that's forgotten because he was sort of... It was a friendly and then within 2 months he was out of the job.
Friendly, though.
But a 4-0 win.
Yeah. David Silva's the key difference, lads, between City and the other top teams, including United. United's biggest mistake in recent years was allowing City to bring him in, says Damien in Clare. It's hard not to feel it's bigger than that. Guardiola's interesting in that he's really changing perceptions of what a coach can do at Premier League level, i.e. he can improve all the players, you know? This sense of...
All of the players.
Pretty much all of them, yeah.
Even like Bernardo Silva looks fantastic.
Unbelievable,
there,
yeah.
And he's part of a succession
in
there.
Delft, there's no questions over
him. Fernandinho's doing his job there. Like,
Fernandinho got the real treatment on Match of the Day last night. I mean, he was picked out most touches. He's doing everything.
Could well have been sent off, though.
Yeah.
Under another ref.
So we'll kick on. The news round is brought to you this evening with Screwfix.ie, championing the trade with a choice of over 20,000 quality trade products. So if you missed, I mean, I'd say Sunday, so you may have been elsewhere. The All Blacks arrived last night and Steve Hansen, instead of having his usual post-morning press conference after a game in London, he cancelled that and said, well, we'll have one in Dublin. And unprompted in the first few minutes of the press conference, said, by the way, Conor Murray's going to play. And, you know, look, I'm not trying to start anything here. I just think he's going to play. If it was one of our lads, he'd play, kind of a thing.
It
seems that I prompted the IRFU to come out and clarify this early doors.
Yeah, Conor Murray has definitively been ruled out of Saturday's test with the All Blacks. The Munster scrum half, of course, yet to play this season due to a neck injury and had been involved with the Ireland squad prior to the test with Italy in Chicago. All Blacks head coach, as you mentioned, Steve Hansen, claimed as recently as yesterday he expected Murray would start against his side at the Aviva. However, the IRFU say Murray is accelerating through his recovery but will not play any part in the remaining tests with New Zealand or indeed the USA. Meanwhile, Robbie Henshaw has also been ruled out of those remaining games, having picked up a hamstring injury during Saturday's win over Argentina. Jonathan Sexton was asked today about the All Blacks victory over England at the weekend. England surrendered a 15-0 lead to lose 16-15 at Twickenham, and it was put to Sexton if the unconvincing nature of the All Blacks win would be disappointing to them.
I wouldn't say they'd be disappointed coming from 15-0 down in Twickenham in those conditions. Like, 15-0 in those conditions is huge. Like, that's, you know, it's massive lead. So to come back from that just shows the experience that they have and the quality they have in their team. And I think that showed just before half time when they're 15-0 down 10 minutes before half time and they managed to get 10 points and changes the whole complexion of the game. So I think they'll take a lot out of that game. They've gone away from home in the wet, had to play a different sort of type of rugby than they've been used to with the conditions, and so I would think it's slightly different. I think they'd get something out of it.
Yeah, they managed to keep England scoreless from the 24th minute on. It was a dream start for England. It was an amazing game. It's just fantastic stuff. If anyone caught it, I'm sure lots of people did over the weekend. I made what, in hindsight, was a naive judgment call. England were 15-0 up. It was the 38th minute. I thought, you know what? We'll get the kettle on early doors. We'll get a cup of tea in time for the analysis. And so I left the room. 38th minute. I thought it was fine. Came back in. It was 15-10 at halftime.
Foolish. Wait till half time for the cup of Joe.
Like, there was obviously ads before the analysis, was
exactly.
there?
Or
was there?
I know, you need to get a kettle on though early.
Like, and yeah. Like, these analysis guys and the people who kind of helm these rugby things are never really that much paying attention to. So.
How big is your house? Like, how long does it take to put the kettle on? You just put the kettle on.
Oh, he's got a massive house after the Virgin Media thing.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sort of trying to think, is this some kind of luxury pad?
Once I was up, I was up.
You put water in, you press it, and you go back in and watch.
Once I was up, I was up. There was a toilet break on the back of the kettle. You know, I just thought, grand, two minutes done.
You should try more fibre in your diet, Joe. Yeah. It's taking that long.
So, but with in 2 minutes they managed to score 10 points.
They turn it all
They're
around.
Just phenomenal.
They've been evicted. I think the All Blacks have been evicted from their regular hotel. They normally stay in Castleknock.
Yeah.
But the Irish team were there this week.
They're in Blanchardstown this week.
So they're in Blanche because the Irish football team are like, well, no, this is our base. Yeah. So. No chance.
Sonny Bill's out, is he?
He is, yeah. He's picked up a shoulder injury off the back of that England game. Hurricane centre in Gani Limape has been called in as cover. As we alluded to earlier, Republic of Ireland manager Martin O'Neill says he'll have discussions with Michael Obafemi over his international intentions. The 18-year-old Southampton striker has been included in the trimmed-down 29-man squad for the friendly with Northern Ireland and the Nations League trip to Denmark. Obafemi qualifies for both England and Nigeria as well, but would be tethered to the Republic of Ireland where he'd play in Aarhus next week as it counts as a competitive international. And O'Neill says it's something that we'll need discussing with Obafemi and his family.
He's in the squad at this minute. He has obviously his decisions to make for his future. You would expect that anyway. And I think that's something that he would obviously discuss with his family. And so there'll be no real pressure on him to make that decision in the next couple of days.
So does that mean you won't feel comfortable putting him into the team against Denmark unless he's obviously made that decision?
Absolutely. Totally. That will be the player and the family's decision to do that. And that's the last thing that you'd want to do is be rushing someone into a situation like that there if they are uncomfortable with it. I don't know if that's the case because I will speak to him this afternoon. But if he has decisions to make, then I would respect that.
So there is a chance that he may still play against Denmark on Monday?
I don't think I could rule that out, certainly, but I would certainly have to have a discussion with him and I think members of his family as well too.
We're obviously just watching that on the video here. Radio listeners, if you didn't see that, which you didn't obviously, in the background Roy Keane was giving Obafemi a shoulder massage just as O'Neill was speaking there. Yeah. If Martial left, Mourinho would have signed Perisic, a more complete and more experienced player as Patton Doolin. Look, I'm all for Perisic. The man is a god. He was phenomenal in the World Cup.
He wanted to sign Perisic instead of Sanchez. That was the thing over the weekend that came out that Alexis Sanchez is miserable.
He's been trying to get Perisic for a long time, but don't sell Martial. The guy has such potential.
Is Perisic, what age is Perisic? He's definitely
30.
He's definitely,
if not even a bit older.
Yeah, I think he might be close to 30 or right.
I mean, if you're Mourinho and you're not trying to build something long-term at Manchester United, which he's not, let's be honest. Of course you're going to sign the 30-year-old who's ready to win the league now.
At least send him out on loan somewhere. Do it like Real Madrid or something too, you know?
It was obvious from day one Martial was brilliant. I mean, that he was willing to let him go and didn't work with him, I just think is horrific. I mean, and it goes against the Manchester United way as well, Dan. It does, though. I mean, like, you know, you can be a little bit pretentious saying that, but...
Oh, it's a thing, is it?
There is, of course, a Manchester United tradition. Hmm. Young players, wing play, attacking football, they are hallmarks of the club.
Yeah, you just wonder, like, how long for that not to exist...
It's kind of gone already.
Yeah, you know, over 5 years of that, does the change?
Yes,
you know,
it goes quickly.
It was boring Arsenal, but I was growing up. You know, you never think about Arsenal in that context now.
Yeah. No, I'll give you that. I suppose when you have the class of 92 hanging around so prominently, it does linger a touch longer. You know, you kind of hark back to what they would have done a bit more.
They hate it to be the comparison, but Manchester United are very rapidly becoming mid-90s Liverpool.
Yeah.
Like, basically anywhere you look, there's an ex-player in the media in a prominent position for Gary Neville, Reid Allen Hansen, etc., etc., and a basket case of managerial appointments.
Yeah, no, the parallels are absolutely
Give
spot
it 10
on.
Years, there'll be like middle-aged men describing themselves as long-suffering Manchester United fans.
Oh, I think that's happened.
Like these Liverpool, but long-suffering, yeah.
Declan Devine's been confirmed as the new manager at Derry City this evening. The 46-year-old returns for a second spell in charge at the Brandywell, replacing the much-missed now Kenny Shields. Devine led the Candy Stripes to FAI success in his first season in charge in 2012 and sealed European qualification with his second before leaving ahead of the 2014 campaign. He has signed Devine a 2-year contract at the Brandywell.
Kenny Shields, a colourful character, will he get another job? Is he highly rated in the league? Or
I don't know if he'll get another job within the League of Ireland. I mean, I'd say he'd been mentioned for jobs in the sort of the Northern Irish League. I mean, I assume he'll be in the mix. His time in Derry finished badly, but his team still played good football, and I think his time in Derry will overall be probably judged favourably enough. But I'm not sure where his priority would be. I would have thought maybe Northern Ireland might be more likely.
Okay. Hi lads, was waiting in Terminal 1 last night, and Sonny Bill walked out right beside me. I was gobsmacked at his size. He is a man mountain. Bottled getting a photo, says Theo in Dublin.
There's a bunch of New Zealand fans already in town, I think. There was one ordering a coffee in front of me in a most recognisable New Zealand accent, right, to the chagrin of the person trying to serve them later on.
I guess if you've travelled up, If you've made a, decided to make a month out of it, what else are you going to do? Yeah. Knock around Dublin for a few days. So where are we going next, last couple of stories?
Yeah, the IRFU says they'll invest in club development and new facilities following the sale of a 92-acre site in West Dublin. Rugby's governing body has confirmed that they've received €27 million, places little finger to mouth, of the land which they acquired in the mid-90s. The unions state the money will be used to provide long-term income for grassroots rugby. While Daniel Sturridge is facing an FA misconduct charge surrounding betting rules, the alleged breach is said to have taken place in January while on loan at West Brom. Sturridge has until 6 p.m. on Tuesday, November 20th, to respond. He denies being involved in any kind of football betting at all. Well, Manchester City boss Pep Guardiola has been asked to explain comments he made about referee Anthony Taylor before yesterday's Manchester derby, which is side 1-3-1. Premier League managers aren't allowed to comment on officials before a match. Guardiola responded to a question on Sky asking if Taylor, who was born in Manchester, could show bias to one of the clubs.
The referees, he don't want to make a mistake, but he knows everybody around the world is going to watch him. And he doesn't want to make mistakes. That is pretty sure. But if after he's fan from United or City, everybody can be fan whatever he wants. So, no problem.
Sticking with City, Kevin De Bruyne is on course to return earlier than expected from injury for the second time this season. The Belgian midfielder injured knee ligaments during the EFL Cup win over Fulham earlier this month and was expected to be missing for up to 6 weeks, but is now hoped De Bruyne could play in the December 4th Premier League trip to Watford, with the game against Chelsea coming 4 days later. Meanwhile, City's head physio is leaving the club for one of its title rivals. Lee Nobes departs for Liverpool at the end of this month after 11 years at the Etihad. As well as Guardiola, Nobes has worked under Sven-Göran Eriksson, Mark Hughes, Roberto Mancini and Manuel Pellegrini.
Why, if Hansen is playing mind games, Ree Murray, would the RFU not keep them guessing? Yeah, I wonder. I just suspect they didn't want this whole thing to consume the week.
I was reading Rory's piece this morning. I know he's going to be on Monday Night Rugby later. He was saying that Joe Schmidt was going to have a word with Murray himself, yes, to see if he was up to playing. So I presume that's actually played a huge role in it.
Probably the key role, yeah. I guess you could keep Hansen guessing. Maybe they just don't want this to become this huge, non-stop, energy-sapping talking point all week. Even if I know, I appreciate they would know on the inside who's playing, but then it probably just proves a distraction. Why not just make a clean cut of it and get on with the week? I think that was probably the thinking. Maybe Hansen sort of nudged them that way, though. Look, they may have decided to do that anyway. Hi, lads. You spent more time talking about EastEnders than City. We're witnessing the most beautiful football ever seen in the Premier League.
Maybe the best team.
Maybe the best team we'll ever see in our lifetimes. Go on, drool all over them, says D in Dublin 1. I mean, we're drooling. We're drooling.
The best team in our lifetimes is a bit dramatic. Small bit dramatic. I mean, they have to maybe do something in Europe before they become that.
They certainly play the most beautiful football, though. Or do they?
Well, I think Barcelona were pretty good for a while.
We're talking Premier League.
Premier League memory, yeah. I mean,
they're certainly right up there.
I don't know. Yeah, no, they're fantastically good to watch.
Against,
I mean,
what though?
In the context of the
against what though?
Well, this is it. I mean, the Premier League results in Europe of late wouldn't sort of inspire you to think that it's sort of a golden Premier League era either, really, is it? So, is it, does that taint it somewhat? Have they, I mean, they're playing beautiful football, but is it at a very strong period? Manchester United are regressing, or we seem to be, you know, feeling that's the case.
United are in eighth position and have a minus goal difference. Mm. Like, that should tell you a fair amount about the Premier League at the moment.
Mm. And also, I mean, the whole Super League thing, stuff goes on. I actually love watching City, but that stuff certainly makes City hard to love.
I would love to know how Guardiola does it.
Yeah.
I just would love to know how he's managed to create something beautiful again, you know?
No, he's clearly an amazing manager. That can't be disputed. But they need to, I mean, that Champions League is the thing that eludes them when it comes to greatness, I think.
No, true. But, I mean, would you bet against them long term over the next 2-3 years?
Yes.
I mean, probably, yeah.
Oh, would you?
Yeah.
Who's the best team in Europe at the moment?
I know. Barca like lost 4-2 at home or 4-3 at home over the weekend, and Real Madrid are in a bit of flux, but I just don't know. I don't know. I'm just worried about the Premier League depth in terms of creating a champion from. I know Liverpool went close last year. Exactly.
Man City will win the Champions League and the Premier League this year.
You think? Okay.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
There's your shout.
1,000%.
That's Joe's call.
All this week and Off the Ball, we're teaming up with Volkswagen, a proud sponsor of Irish rugby. They want to reward Ireland's dedicated rugby fans by giving them the hottest tickets in town. So, tonight we're giving you the chance to win an Ireland Limited Edition Series jersey, and you go into our end-of-week draw to win a pair of tickets to Ireland, New Zealand this Saturday, plus accommodation in Dublin City Centre. So, a brilliant prize. To win, just identify our mystery voice. He was asked how he intends to cook his sausages this weekend.
I think we'll better them.
That's Dreadful. Text your name and answer 53106 for 30 cents and we'll announce we'll announce the winner before the end of the show. And do remember, by the way, to drop into the Volkswagen Fan TV Tiguan on Lansdowne Road ahead of the Autumn International Games this month for your chance to meet a rugby legend, test your rugby knowledge and skills and win some great prizes. For more information, follow Volkswagen on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. All with thanks to Volkswagen, a proud sponsor of Irish rugby. Now that is our news round done. And in just a couple of moments, we're going to talk to Sean Montgomery. He's the chairperson of the Combined Counties Football League because a referee over the weekend, dreadful situation. Daniel Sweeney, the referee, allegedly assaulted in the car park after a game. And he has ended up with a jaw broken in two places, a fractured eye socket, multiple stitches in his nose. Shocking situation. So we're going to see what happened next.
Off the ball on Newstalk.
Thanks to Screwfix.ie. Championing the trade with a choice of over 20,000 quality trade products.